In urging the defense of the newborn state, Begin sought to invoke so many who had gone before, both in the land of Israel and in the exile, ensuring that their spirits lived, that their presence was felt by those Jews facing difficult battle ahead. Welcome to Jerusalem 365, episode 199, The War for Independence. I'm Meir Soloveitchik. As the last hours of the British Mandate drifted away, war further enveloped the Holy Land. The incredible prologue to the book O Jerusalem set the scene. Quote, they knew the sound. For months before this afternoon in May 1948, the forlorn wail had symbolized the frontiers of their existence. It was the skirl of British bagpipes, and now its call reverberated for the last time down these ancient stone passageways, piping away the few British soldiers left inside the old walled city of Jerusalem. They marched in columns, silent and unsmiling, the rhythmic tramp of their boots blending with the dying notes of the bagpipes. At the head and the rear of each column, one soldier, a Sten gun crooked in his elbow, broke the pattern of their unwavering stares, his restless eyes scanning the hostile stone facades around them. Along the street of the Jews, from the sculptured stone windows of their synagogues and the mildewed hallways of their sacred houses of learning, the bearded old men watched them go. Their ancestors had watched other soldiers march out of Jerusalem. Babylonians, Assyrians, Romans, Persians, Arabs, Crusaders, and Turks. The martial predecessors of these departing British soldiers whose brief 30-year reign over Jerusalem was now ending. End quote. As the book goes on to describe, the British troops stopped at the door of one of the distinguished spiritual leaders of Jerusalem's Jewish quarter, Rabbi Mordechai Weingarten. He got up, put on his black vest and jacket, adjusted his gold-rimmed spectacles and his black hat, and stepped into the courtyard. There before Weingarten stood a middle-aged British major wearing the yellow and red insignia of the Suffolk Regiment. From his right hand dangled a bar of rusted iron, almost a foot long. With a solemn gesture, he offered it to the elderly rabbi. It was a key, the key to Zion Gate, one of the seven gates of the old city of Jerusalem. From the year 70 AD until today, he said, a key to the gates of Jerusalem has never been in Jewish hands. This is the first time in 18 centuries that your people have been so privileged. End quote. The book references the Talmudic tradition with which our own series began. The story of the priests of Jerusalem holding the keys of the temple aloft, delivering them to God as the flames suffused the structure. Rabbi Weingarten responded to this incredible moment, uttering the same blessing as that which was said at Israel's Declaration of Independence. Quote, blessed art thou, O Lord, murmured Weingarten, who had granted us life and sustenance and permitted us to reach this day. Then, addressing the Englishman, he said, I accept this key in the name of my people. End quote. The Englishman turned. With a quick order, he marched his men out of the rabbi's little courtyard. Already the shadows of evening stretched across the old city. Soon a new sound rose to replace the echoes of the bagpipes. Hearing it, Weingarten, still clutching the key to Zion Gate in his hands, stiffened. The sound was a reminder of how tenuous was his people's title to the gates it opened, and how short-lived might be their new domain over these stones, from which they had been cast in exile so many centuries before. Once again, Jerusalem was about to become a battlefield. While the rabbi listened in the gathering darkness, the noise grew and multiplied until it seemed to rise from every corner of the old city. Sinister and terrifying, it was the sound of gunfire. End quote. So write the authors of O Jerusalem, Larry Collins and Dominique LaPierre. It would not be only that day, of course, that gunfire would be heard. And it would not be only that day that the blessing said by Rabbi Weingarten, the blessing known as Shachianu, would be recited by Jews. What would follow in the days to come would be immensely difficult, and soon after the British departed, the blessing would be said again by another Jewish leader who would help prepare the Jewish warriors for the battle to come. Drawing largely on scenes from the book O Jerusalem, this episode will set the stage for what was to follow. As midnight Friday night approached and the British departed, the very gunshots that echoed throughout the sacred city reflected the failure of the British mandate to live up to the hopes of 1917. Strikingly, as O Jerusalem notes, even the departure of the British made manifest failure. Collins and LaPierre describe the last British High Commissioner, Sir Alan Cunningham, leaving the territorial waters of the Holy Land. Quote, in the harbor, on board the cruiser Euralius, Sir Alan Cunningham climbed slowly up the passageway leading to the bridge. There, the ship's captain motioned him to a large wooden platform in its center. As Cunningham mounted it, the ship's crew cast off the ropes holding her to the shore. Slowly, the ship moved into the channel, where an aircraft carrier and half a dozen destroyers of the British Mediterranean Squadron lined her passage out to sea. On their decks in dress whites, their crews moved to a salute. At a signal, all their searchlights fell on the lonely man on the bridge of the Euralius. Gathering speed, the cruiser slipped along the majestic line of the ships. And the chapter concludes. As Sir Alan's cruiser finally reached the 3-mile limit, she hove to for the act that would officially mark the end of Great Britain's Palestine Mandate. From one end of the ship to the other, an enormous spray of fireworks arched into the Mediterranean sky, sprinkling the dark night with ribbons of orange, red, and yellow. When the last spark tumbled hissing into the sea, Sir Alan thought, "That's the end. It's all over." He glanced at his watch. Then he gasped. It was only 11 o'clock. Britain's star-crossed Palestine mandate had not been able to end without one final error. It had been terminated 1 hour too soon. The ship's captain had forgotten to take into account the difference between British summertime and Palestine time. End quote. That night, Egyptian planes bombed Tel Aviv. In Jerusalem, in the new city as in the old, war raged. Outside the walls of the old city, Jews and Arabs fought for every neighborhood. And the Sabbath that followed, the Day of Independence, was a terrible one. O Jerusalem tells us, quote, "The emergency clinics and operating theaters established in the new city by the Magen David Adom were already overflowing. Deprived of their facilities on Mount Scopus, the Jewish medical establishment had converted their neighborhood clinics into military hospitals. They had even rented the classrooms of the St. Joseph Convent School to supplement their limited hospital space. Bandages, plasma, antibiotics, and 2,000 flasks of blood had been divided among the clinics. Water was desperately short. What had been used to scrub wounds was meticulously saved to wash the floors. Since laundries couldn't work, sheets were taken from the dead to welcome the wounded. As there was almost no electric power, operations were performed by flashlight. Anti-tetanus serum and morphine were almost non-existent." End quote. Meanwhile, with the British having departed, the once most wanted man in the mandate was now free to come out of hiding and to shed forever the many disguises he had been forced to take on. After Shabbat, on Saturday night, Menachem Begin broadcast his own reflections on Jewish independence. Like Rabbi Weingarten the day before in the Old City, like Rabbi Fishman Maimon at the Tel Aviv Museum, like Nathan the Cantor at the Friday night celebration described in our previous episode by Yehuda Avner, Menachem Begin focused on the Shehecheyanu blessing, referencing the way in which it was said by Jews throughout the centuries to mark happy occasions, and the way in which it was recited by Jews over the eating of a new fruit that had not been experienced that year. Begin said, quote, "After many years of underground warfare, years of persecution and moral and physical suffering, the rebels against the oppressors stand before you with a blessing of thanks on their lips and a prayer in their hearts. The blessing is the age-old blessing with which our fathers and our forefathers have always greeted holy days. It was with this blessing that they used to taste any fruit for the first time in the season. Today is truly a holiday, a holy day, and a new fruit is visible before our very eyes." End quote. The new fruit to which Begin was homiletically referring was, of course, the newborn Jewish state. Begin, therefore, emphasized how important and apt this blessing was and said, quote, "We therefore can say with full heart and soul on this first day of our liberation from the British occupier, blessed is he who has sustained us and enabled us to have reached this time," end quote. So Begin said, "At first blush, we might be surprised at what might seem a seemingly anticlimactic reference in the opening of his remarks at this incredible moment in Jewish history. The Declaration of Independence read by Ben-Gurion on the day before began with sweeping statements about Jewish history and continued with legal statements about the United Nations and the ending of the British Mandate, and continuing with political arguments about the importance of establishing the state." Begin, in contrast, referenced a blessing said by Jews over a new fruit, but Begin was actually doing something profound, I believe, in referencing this Jewish ritual. The tradition by Jews to partake in a new fruit and to recite the Shehecheyanu blessing upon it is performed on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, the Jewish New Year. In general, the rituals of the second day of the New Year celebration is exactly the same as the first. A new fruit is therefore placed on the table the second evening in order to endow a definite newness to a day that is actually repeating itself, the second day of the new year. This makes what might seem old actually new. Here, the state that was born was indeed new, but it was also old. It was both something entirely extraordinary and also an echo of Jewish states that had existed in the Holy Land in the past. And Begin, throughout his remarks, emphasized that the newness of this Jewish state was founded upon the oldness of the Jewish presence in the land, as well as the Jewish dedication to and love for the land. In urging the defense of the newborn state, Begin sought to invoke so many who had gone before, both in the land of Israel and in the exile, ensuring that their spirits lived that their presence was felt by those Jews facing difficult battle ahead. Begin concluded his remarks, quote, "But for the time being, let us think of the battle, for only the outcome of the battle will decide our fate and future. We shall go on our way into battle, soldiers of the Lord of hosts, inspired by the spirit of our ancient heroes, from the conquerors of Canaan to the rebels of Judah. We shall be accompanied by the spirit of those who revived our nation, Zev Benjamin Herzl, Max Nordau, Joseph Trumpeldor, and the father of resurrected Hebrew heroism, Zev Jabotinsky. We shall be accompanied by the spirit of David Raziel, greatest of the Hebrew commanders of our day, and by Dov Gruner, one of the greatest of Hebrew soldiers. We shall be accompanied into battle by the spirit of the heroes of the gallows, the conquerors of death, and we shall be accompanied by the spirit of millions of our martyrs, our ancestors tortured and burned for their faith, our murdered fathers and butchered mothers, our murdered brothers and strangled children. And in this battle, we shall break the enemy and bring salvation to our people, tried in the furnace of persecution, thirsting only for freedom, for righteousness, and for justice," end quote. Thus did Menachem Begin, in this moment that was very new for the Jewish people, seek to connect those listening to those who had lived and led in a land that was very old, as well as to those who had longed for that very old land. Begin, in other words, was reflecting that the Jewish state was, as Herzl had titled his novel, an Alt-Neuland, an old new land. And in connecting his audience to the past, he steeled them to face the future. Begin concluded his memory of this moment with words that will bring our episode to a close. He wrote in his book, The Revolt, as follows, quote, "I went out into the night. The streets of Tel Aviv were deserted. That morning, the city had had a taste of aerial bombardment. My comrades told me that almost every Jewish home with a radio had listened into my address, and I was thankful to learn that my words had helped to hearten the people. Darkness was all about us, blackout, not a glimmer of light. The darkness would continue, blood would still be shed, but beyond the sorrow and the darkness, the rosy dawn was breaking through. We had come forth from slavery to freedom. On the morrow, the sun would shine, and Jewish children, once more, would laugh," end quote. This is Meir Soloveitchik, looking forward to learning together tomorrow, signing off.